the nurses breached the standard of care. There is nothing in this report that indicates why the standard of nursing care caused the death. Nothing. May it please the court, my name is Nicole Bunn. I represent the nursing home in this case, Santa Fe Nursing and Rehab Center. We have objected to this to the Chapter 74 report before you as an interlocutory appeal. We have objected based on the qualification and the sufficiency of the report. Number one, Dr. Mitchell, the author of this report, is board certified in internal medicine, but there is nothing in his report at all which suggests why he would be qualified to testify about nursing care in this case. Contrary to plaintiff's briefing, we are not framing this argument as a doctor can never testify about nursing care. We understand that there is case law out there, and we respect the fact that there are situations where physicians may be qualified to testify about nursing care. Our argument is that there is nothing in this report to indicate why this doctor is qualified to talk about nursing care in this case. The case law cited by plaintiff, every single one of them, establishes either through affidavit, report, or testimony why that physician was qualified to talk about nursing care or care in a different practice or field. We would also, we've also objected to the standard of care recitation in this report. And this is very interesting because there is nothing in Chapter 74 and there is no precedent which gives me a vehicle to object to the standard of care elicited by this expert in this report. The standard of care espoused by him is wrong for nursing care. If you look at the standard of care that he talks about, it is identical to the standard of care for the four physicians in this case. There is no differentiation between nursing and doctor standard of care, which only highlights his lack of qualifications to talk about nursing care. For example, he says the nurses should have performed an IFC filter. That's an intravenous cava filter. It is a medical device that needs to be surgically implanted. There is no way that the Medical Licensing Board of Texas will allow a nurse to perform a surgical procedure. The other thing he says is that
conversely, the doctor probably can't do it without nurses.
That is,
so it would be accurate to say the doctor and the nurses should have.
That's possible, but a nurse does not make the decision whether or not that is something that needs to be done on a patient and does not initiate it and does not perform it. That is a doctor's decision to make.
Do I recall that you have gone the final step and opined that this is not even a good faith effort?
Your Honor, I don't believe that it is a good faith effort.
Why so?
Because I believe that there is case law that suggests that even the fact that if you do not have a qualified expert to testify, it shows face value that it is not a good faith effort. This physician is not established his qualifications, and moreover, he has not indicated what nursing standard of care is implicated in this case at all.
Well, doesn't he throughout the report, though, talk about both nursing and staff, as well as other employees at the health center, the rehab center, that they should have undertaken whatever methods for a patient at risk for thrombotic complications?
Judge Livingston, he says they should have done three things. One of them was that surgical procedure I talked about. The other one was ordering a low-dose heparin therapy. That's a drug that cannot be ordered by nursing at all. It has to be ordered by physicians. In fact, one of the cases cited by plaintiff in her brief, Manor Care, is a case involving anticoagulant therapy. And in that case, the expert said specifically in his report that it is the doctors who order it. The nurses follow the orders, but it is the doctor who orders it, not the nurses.
But it sounds like you're saying you don't agree with the standard of care, therefore it wasn't a good faith effort.
In this case, quite honestly, I don't agree with the standard of care. I don't think anyone can agree with the standard of care in the medical field. Unfortunately, there's not a vehicle in Chapter 74 or any precedent which gives me any indication how to combat that. But these standards of care elicited by this doctor, who has not established his qualifications to talk about nursing care, are just flat out wrong. Every single one of them.
I understand that's your opinion, but we're talking about making a good faith effort.
Yes, Your Honor. I do not believe that it is good faith effort. He had the records before him.
All I've heard so far, I believe, is that you don't agree with it and the opinions are wrong.
Because he had the records before him. He says he looked at the statute. He knows what the statute requirements are, and then he blithely ignores the statutory requirements.
Well, I doubt seriously that any report furnished by them, criticizing your client, you would have agreed with.
That's true.
Therefore, you would say it's never a good faith effort because I don't agree with it.
Well, you asked me why I thought it was not a good faith effort, and those are my opinions why. Okay. I do not think it's a good faith effort. I don't think, and to finish your answer to your question, the third thing he says the nurses should have done was apply TED hoses, which, again, is something that should be ordered by physicians. And so I don't think that he has given us, and one of the things that Texas courts have routinely held is it is critical. It is imperative to tell me what the standard of care is so I can defend my client and so that the trial court can evaluate the viability of the claim.
Don.
Yes, sir.
On page 3 of the report you were just holding up there a minute ago, says under the paragraph that's topic, applicable standards of care, and there's allegations that Santa Fe Health and Rehab Center and its nurses and staff, and it's alleging that people that are listed as part of the staff are Dr. Zabdia, Dr. Tarkington, Dr. Garman, and Dr. Walker. And is it your position that those doctors are not agents, representatives, and staff of Santa Fe?
Yes, Your Honor, most definitely, and it's not alleged in this case that they are agents or staff of the facility. There's a comma following staff. There are more defendants in this case. All of the ones that are following are defendants, and if you notice, as the report progresses, he breaks out each and every distinct person.
I didn't read that there was any special exceptions filed to the amended petition that's attached to the briefing.
I'm sorry?
Are there any special exceptions filed to the pleadings that were listed or are attached as a second amended petition?
I don't recall if there were any special exceptions filed, and they would not be filed with respect to the report. They would have been filed with respect to the allegations.
I'm concerned about the allegations in the pleading. That's what.
Okay.
I'm asking you about.
Those. Your Honor, I don't recall.
Okay, thank you.
With respect to the third part, the causation part, there is nothing in Dr. Mitchell's report which shows that the nurses that are doing nursing care cause this man's death. He gives 5 possible causes for the death. He says, number 1, the DVT could have occurred before he went to the nursing home. It could have occurred while he was at the nursing home. It could have occurred after he left the nursing home. It could have occurred after he had surgery at the hospital. And it could have occurred because the physicians elected not to do a life-saving procedure because decedent was a Jehovah's Witness and would refuse a blood transfusion. Out of those 5 possibilities, he never narrows it down. Each one is a possibility. Each one is conjecture. Each one is conclusory. But he does not say what my nurses did that caused decedent's death. As such, I don't think that this is a sufficient report. I don't think it has met the qualifications. He is not qualified. He has not articulated the appropriate standard of care or explained how the nursing standard of care caused this man's death. As such, I think the report is insufficient on its face.
But really, at this point, how far does the report have to go in regard to causation? I mean, you're complaining about not identifying which of the 5 alleged problems with causation might have caused this.
Actually, Texas case law holds that it actually has to link the facts with the cause of death. It has to link what the alleged breaches in the standard of care were and how they contributed or caused to the death, and this report does not.
What about, though, I want to go back to kind of my earlier question on page 3 of the report. He sounds as if his real complaint as to staff and as to your client and nursing was the failure to identify this patient as one who would be at risk.
I have some problems with that, and I'll tell you what they are. Number 1, he says that they should have identified him as being at risk because he was obese and immobile. Well, 75% of the nursing home population fits that description. The third thing he says
is that doesn't mean we just ignore it.
That's correct. That's correct, and that's why I have not highlighted that part. But that in and of itself, just because you identify it, doesn't give him over the hurdle. He has to say what precautions they should have taken, and in this case, he does not. I would point out that the third thing he talks about is the homocysteine levels, yet he does not indicate that my nurse has never had that lab result. It was taken at a different facility. He doesn't say whether or not the nurses, what they would have done had they had the lab result. They do not diagnose disease. Their responsibility, the nursing standard of care, is to notify the physician of the abnormal lab results. In this case, the physician had already been notified. Any questions?
Ms. Dunn, on page 5, section 5.01, of the second amended petition alleges that Dr., how to pronounce his name, Zadeh, was under his care that David William Cox was at Santa Fe Nursing and Rehabilitation, and that he is alleged to be the doctor who was providing the care at that Santa Fe facility.
Dr. Zadeh was a treating physician at one point in time. Dr. Zadeh is not a member of the staff. He is not a member of the nursing home. He has his own physician, his own attorney. He is not employed by the nursing home at all.
The allegations and the pleadings, though, allege that as far as the beginning of the place to look at for compliance with Chapter 74 and Section 351.
I understand that.
All right. But your position is that this allegation of agency and relationship between Dr. Zadeh and Santa Fe is not sufficient to raise that question as far as your analysis of the standards of care that are produced and stated on page 3 of the letter that you held up.
Your Honor, according to the report, with the standard of care for the nursing center and its staff, and they do describe these alleged breaches of standard of care, which are physician-oriented. They have a separate section for Dr. Zadeh. It is my reading of the report that it is not intended to be included under the nursing care of the nursing staff.
Thank you very much.
And even if it were, I would think that the report is insufficient as to the nurses.
Thank you. Counsel? Let's just get right to it. Your expert has to state the standard of care for nurses. He has to state why he is able to be aware and testify about what the standard of care is. He has to testify as to why there was a breach and why that breach caused injury. Now, I'm struggling reading this report in finding anywhere where he establishes why he should be able to opine as to the standard of care of nurses. Can you point me to something here?
Yes, Your Honor. First, the framing of the issue is, I think, very critical here, because in the framing of whether or not Dr. Kenneth Mitchell, who is board certified in internal medicine, is on active staff of two hospitals in Austin, works and treats patients who are institutionalized in a hospital setting, works with nurses in that setting. The concept of whether or not he is qualified as to a nursing standard of care is framing the issue as if that's the inquiry. The inquiry has to be the nursing issue, and the inquiry is actually slightly different. And the appellate courts have all, who have been confronted with this issue, found that the issue is the medical issue in this case. In fact, that's written into the very statute, 74-402, that discusses expert qualifications, and specifically expert qualifications into broader healthcare settings as opposed to just limited to physician malpractice. The first one is that the expert is practicing healthcare in a field of practice that involves the same type of care as the care by the defendant. And Dr. Mitchell, in his report, explains that the care at issue in this case is the identification of a patient who was at risk for the development of a deep venous thrombosis and pulmonary embolism and the failure to treat that. And that standard of care is applicable to all of the healthcare providers that treated Mr. Cox in the expert
report. How does he know that?
Well, he knows that, Your Honor, because he is a physician who has experience treating that very condition. And
if there was a podiatrist in the surgical suite during open heart surgery and he was an open heart surgeon, I think he would be very familiar with what the standard of care for the open heart surgery is, but I don't think he could testify, well, the podiatrist should have seen that I was improperly working with this stent, because he can't testify as the standard of care of a podiatrist. So I'm struggling here. Yes, I'm sure he knows what standard of care is to take care of this particular patient and his problems, but seems to me he has to come from the view of a nurses in a nursing home and state, now here's why I know this. I've worked in a nursing home, and I know what the, and I just don't see any of that.
What he does say, Your Honor, is his familiarity with the treatment of a patient who is at risk for the development of a DVT. He does not try and stray over to what a nursing care ought to be in treatment of a cardiology patient.
But there's a difference in the standard of care of the nurses treating this, and I don't know if this person is related to Jim Zeta, but there's a lawyer Jim Zeta, Dr. Zeta, or all these other doctors. There's a different standard of care for those. So I don't see how you can just say, I'm familiar with how this is treated, when there's different standards of care depending on who it is that's looking at the situation. And then he criticized them blanket style. I'm having trouble with that.
He criticizes them because they act in concert. I mean, what he explains in his report is what the treatment that should have been rendered and who should have identified it. And he goes on to say that it should have been identified by Dr. Zadeh. It should have been identified by the nurses. It should have been identified by Dr. Tarkenton. Nobody identified this gentleman who was 57 years old and immobilized as a patient at risk for the development of a DVT. And the autopsy report that Dr. Mitchell explains in his report shows very clearly that what Mr. Cox died of was the development of multiple DVTs that went to the pulmonary vasculature, and he developed a pulmonary embolism and passed away.
So it's just your position that when you say the standard of care required Santa Fe Health and Rehab Center and its nurses and staff to identify Mr. Smith as being at risk for the development of pulmonary embolism, as you just said, that's a blanket. The same standard of care applies to the nurses, as to the doctors, as to the head nurse, LVNs, RNs. It's one standard of care.
The standard of care for identifying a patient who is immobilized as being at risk for the development of a PE post following a trauma does apply to each one of those.
And take necessary precautions against the development of thrombotic conditions. That applies across the board.
It applies as Dr. Mitchell explains it does, because we know from going way back to one of the first big cases analyzing whether or not an expert report is adequate, American Transitional versus Palacios from the Supreme Court in 2001, you're confined to looking at the four corners of that report. And in the four corners of his report, Dr. Mitchell does explain what the standard of care is. He identifies it. He explains how it was breached, and he explains how the breaches, the failure to institute those prophylactic measures to prevent the formation of blood clots, caused the death of Mr. Cox. He goes beyond even just setting out those three things. He explains the physiology of how those blood clots actually develop. And the report, when you look at the four corners of the report, the question of whether or not the trial court analyzing this report abused its discretion needs to be answered no. The trial court looked at this report, determined that it satisfied the requirements of Chapter 74, and it was a proper exercise of the court's discretion. This expert is actually opining very similarly to the expert in Manor Care Health Services versus Reagan. It's a very analogous case, 2006 case out of the 14th Court of Appeals, and in that particular case, there was a physician who came in and was criticizing the nursing staff for not providing medications to prevent a pulmonary embolism. And the court said, yes, you are qualified to offer those opinions. You are qualified to offer opinions as to the nursing standard of care. Dr. Mitchell explains in his report what his background is, that he treats patients just like Mr. Cox, that he's got the education, training, and experience to be able to offer opinions regarding the healthcare providers that acted in concert to bring about Mr. Cox's death. He explains.
Where is that? Show me where it is that he explains that he's able to offer opinions about the nursing home and the staff based on his background and experience.
Well, he says, I believe, Your Honor, on page 2 when he goes through, 2 and 3 when he goes through his experience and qualifications, that he is board certified in internal medicine. He explains that he treats patients with the same condition as David Cox, both at the time that Mr. Cox passed away and currently. And that he is familiar with what the treatment is and what the healthcare providers needed to do. He sets out in his report where he treats patients. It's an institutional setting. He treats them in a hospital. He discusses on the last page of the report that the immobility of patients in institutional settings needs to lead to a diagnosis that patient is at risk for a DVT. He goes so far as to explain.
So based on his report, there's no distinction to be drawn between the standard of care at a what I'll call a regular hospital as opposed to a rehabilitation or nursing home center?
Based on his report, the four corners, the determination that a patient is at risk for the development of a DVT is not going to be different. The healthcare providers need to recognize that you have a patient who has prolonged immobility, obesity, risk factors that predispose you to development of a deep venous thrombosis, and take measures to prevent that. Dr. Mitchell says that the measures, in reasonable medical probability, the use of any of these preventive measures would have prevented the formation of massive pulmonary embolism that led to Mr. Cox's death. And when he says any of those, he also explains that you apply these different treatments in a sequence. And it says, depending on the length of time of immobilization, these prophylactic measures include use of compression stockings or sequential air compression hose, physical therapy to manipulate and stimulate movement in the legs and trunks. That's the very thing that Mr. Cox was actually transferred to Santa Fe for. But yet he remained immobile while he was there, and nobody recognized that this man was at risk for the development of a DVT until he actually develops the DVT and dies. That goes on then to stimulating movement in the legs, then a consideration for low-dose heparin, depending on the risk of bleeding complications, and then if you're at high risk, the placement of an inferior vena cava.
Well, how do you respond to appellant's position that nurses generally can't order medications, and they also cannot even apparently order the hose to be applied, that has to be a doctor's order?
What I guess my response is, I think it was very clear when appellant's counsel was arguing that the real crux of this is that she just disagrees with what Dr. Mitchell's opinions are. And so she's going to give you all this extra argument going outside the four corners of the report to try and support her disagreement with his opinions, and that's not really the analysis. The analysis is, does this report constitute a good faith effort to meet the statutory requirements? Does it inform the defendant of the conduct being called into question? Yes, it does. It says you should have identified him at risk. You should have instituted measures to prevent the formation of these clots. It explains what those measures are in that sequence. Does this report provide the trial court with sufficient information for the trial court to reach the conclusion that the claims are meritorious? Because if it does those two things, tells the defendant of the conduct being called into question and informs the trial court of the merits of the case, then the report is a good faith effort. And true, the report needs to touch on the statutory requirements, standard of care, breach, and causation, but Dr. Mitchell's report does that. He sets forth his opinion of the standard of care, that it required the recognition of this patient as being a patient at risk for the development of deep venous thrombosis, and the institution of measures to prevent the formation of those before they reach the point of clotting off, which is exactly what happened, the pulmonary vasculature, so that you can't get the exchange of oxygen in the blood system and the body dies. This report sets forth and establishes each of the requisite elements of an expert report, and certainly the trial court was well within its discretion when it reached the determination that Dr. Mitchell's report satisfied the requirements of Chapter 74. The same standard of care for multiple defendants, there have been courts that have addressed that as being an appropriate issue. In Ray Boone, which is an Amarillo 2006 opinion, recognizes that you can set out even this standard of care and then just say each one of them breached it. Dr. Mitchell's report goes beyond that, and he identifies each one of the defendants or each one of the healthcare providers and explains what they should have done. Romero versus Lieberman is another opinion out of the Dallas Court of Appeals in 2007, again finding that multiple defendants can be held to a single standard of care. The causation opinions, Dr. Mitchell sets out exactly what or how the failure to institute these measures led to Mr. Cox's development of a DVT. It satisfies the requirement of being a good faith effort to comply with the statute as it relates to each of the requisite elements. And for these reasons, the appellees would request that this court affirm the trial court's decision. Alternatively, there was an issue that wasn't ever reached in the trial court, and that was that under the statute, the proponent of an expert report can ask for a 30-day extension if some component of the report is found to be inadequate. And because the trial court found the report to be adequate, he never reached that. But if this court disagrees, then the appellees would urge this court for that extension.
May it please the court. With respect to qualifications, counsel said Dr. Mitchell works with nurses. That's nowhere in the report. That is an assumption, and that is not what we are allowed to do when reading the four corners of the report. There's nothing in the report that said he works with nurses, nothing in the report that says what his involvement with nurses is, if any. There is nothing in the report at all regarding how he knows or would know about the standard of care applicable to nurses. Plaintiff's attorney says that, well, he handles people with the same condition as decedent. But you notice nowhere in the report does he say what that condition is. Nowhere does he say deep vein thrombosis. Decedent had multiple conditions. He had broken ribs. He had anemia. He had hyperlipidemia. He had hypertension. Nowhere does he say that the condition that he's familiar with is deep vein thrombosis. Now, plaintiff says that this is issue-driven. We have to look at the issue, and I respectfully disagree. The issue is not just the medical condition, but the standard of care for the practitioner in responding to that condition. Physicians and nurses have very different standards of care. They have different education, different licensing standards, and they approach a patient from a very different practice. And to say that they are the same without explaining why the standard of care is the same to them is unfair, and it does not meet the requirements of Chapter 74. With respect to the standard of care, plaintiff said, well, the nurses should have assessed this patient as being risk for DVT. And to do that, they should have noticed that he was obese and immobile. But Dr. Mitchell never says why this patient is different from the 70 to 80% of nursing home patients who are obese or immobile. Why is this patient special? Why is it that the nurses, the doctors make diagnosis, why is it the nurses should have said that this patient is different from the other obese and immobile patients in the nursing home and warranted special attention? There's nothing in the report which says that. And what preventative measures they say should have been taken place are not nursing measures. They are physician measures. And they are not adequate and they are not sufficient to meet the statute's requirements. With respect to the staff issue that you raised, Judge Meyer, you know what? Quite honestly, it's not been a focus in this case. It had not been raised before. If you need additional briefing on the issue, I'd be happy to do that for you. But I do believe that the report is insufficient as to the nursing and to the nurses. And with respect to Dr. Zadeh, Dr. Zadeh's own counsel had an opportunity to object to the report, and Dr. Zadeh's own counsel is representing him, and there is no employment or staff relationship between Dr. Zadeh or the nursing home. With respect to the good faith effort, again, Justice McCoy, I think that the report speaks for itself. I think that the doctor knew the requirements. He said he knew the requirements for writing the Chapter 74 report. He indicated that he is a physician, but he didn't explain how he's qualified to talk about nursing, and he didn't explain why the nursing staff should have thought that this patient was any different than others walking through their door and has not given us a nursing standard of care. And for that, I think that on its face, that constitutes bad faith. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Your case is submitted. We're going to take a very short break, and then we'll come back and hear our third oral argument for the day.